This is WSFI Spotlight, a conversation with Catholics living in the light.
On today's episode of WSFI Spotlight, we feature a presentation from Joe Scheidler, the National Director of the Pro-Life Action League, a national pro-life educational and activist organization headquartered in Chicago. Joe was the chief defendant in a RICO lawsuit brought against him, the League, and other pro-life activists by the National Organization for Women and two abortion clinics. The case, Now v. Scheidler, originally filed in 1986, is the only case to be sent before the Supreme Court three times. The Pro-Life Action League emerging victorious each time. Joe is a dynamic speaker on the moral dimensions of the abortion issue and the effectiveness of direct action. Joe is a recognized expert on the abortion culture, sidewalk counseling, the spiritual dimension of pro-life activism, fetal experimentation, working with the media, the responsibility of the church to fight abortion, battling the courts, and the need for a return to morality. In this episode, Joe challenges the shifts in culture he has experienced over the years in the light of his Catholic training and church teaching. Now, here is Joe Scheidler.
You know, the audience out there, you and I are living in a time of great crusade because we're living in a time that the church and morality are being attacked viciously. You could say then that we're going out and try to reestablish the foundation of our civilization because we've become immoral. We've become indifferent. The mainline Protestant churches now support gay marriage and contraception and abortion and so on. And it's only the evangelical fundamentalists and the active Catholics that really take the Ten Commandments seriously and take the commandments of the church seriously and follow them. Our fight, for instance, on the HHS mandate, our fight to try to keep, not have to get involved in gay marriage and all this, things we wouldn't even have thought of. For instance, when I was in high school, I was the chaplain of the student body. And we would get all the classes together in the gym and start out our meeting with the Our Father. They called it the Lord's Prayer, and I always left off the power and the glory, and they thought I didn't know the prayer because this guy doesn't say the end of it. But I said, that's the Catholic version. When we'd come into our class on Monday morning, our first class was homeroom. And almost always, the teacher would say, what did your minister or priest say to you yesterday? Because we all went to church. Every kid in that room went to the Methodist, Presbyterian, Christian, whatever, Catholic, and they always loved to have the Catholics because we always had good sermons and we had to remember them because we'd been taught that way. And so that was a common thing. Can you imagine that today happening, even in a Catholic school, that you don't talk about what you heard from the pulpit the day before because most kids don't go to church? Most don't. They don't believe. Even Catholics are, the drop-off is unbelievable. My wife Ann grew up in Glenview, Illinois, and there was a big Naval Air Station there. And it was worked out with the pilots that would come in to build up hours for their flying, you know, to get their licenses and so on. They would not fly from 11 till 12. It was an agreement that no plane would take off or land or cross over the churches from 11 to 12, because the high mass in the Catholic Church was at 11 o'clock, and most of the other churches had decided to have their main service at 11 to 12, or they maybe went on further, because there was that respect, that regard for religion. And so these weekend warriors cooperated. Everybody was church-oriented, and now we're not. We've forgotten, too, the contributions of the church, the Middle Ages, the Crusades, the foundation of hospitals. When the centurion came to Jesus and said, heal my servant, why didn't he just go to a hospital? There weren't any hospitals. Jesus cured the centurion. The centurion had a lot of money. He could have built a hospital. He had built a temple. But it took the church. And one of the first things the church did when it went out to spread the religion, it also established hospitals. It established universities. It set up this whole program of education, of caring for others. Places where the monasteries would feed people. You could make it, they were spaced in such a way you could go from one monastery to another, because the monasteries had certain rules, you couldn't stay there forever. I was a Benedictine for a while, and I know we had people come, and we had a little room, and they could get their meals and stay 3 or 4 days at St. Meinrad, and they had to move on to some other monastery. But the point was, there was a place for taking care of people, and it was a church that was behind all this. The church has been behind our civilization as we know it. The civilization that we have grown up in was known for hundreds and hundreds of years, and it was the church was at the core. But now we are leaving the church. And in leaving the church, we are becoming immoral. We are an immoral society. About 25 years ago, I was invited to Aspen, Colorado to a think tank. Now, these were people from NBC, ABC, Columbia Pictures, you name it. These were the media people. And along with the media people were representatives of Playboy magazine and the gay rights movement at that time. And you weren't allowed to interrupt any of the speakers, but if you raised your hand, they would put your name down on a list. And then at the end of the talk, they would go down the list. Well, I just started raising my hand every time I had any objection, because I knew then I would get to give my own talk at the end of their talk. The first talk they gave us was an absolute effort to destroy any morality at all. There is no outside force that gives us, provides us with what's right and wrong. We decide ourselves. This was 25 years ago. And it was one of the most depressing 3 days I have ever spent in my life. There was one other Christian there, practicing Christian, Don Wildman, but he got the flu and left. So there's Joe Scheidler with all these pagans. And actually, that's sort of fun, because I would go, there were 33 of us, and at mealtime, I would go first to the dining hall and sit at the table by myself, and as the people came in, they fanned off into every other table, and the last five were stuck with me. And the last five were usually the guy from Playboy and the gay person and an older couple that ran theaters and so on. And we got to know each other, nothing personal. They knew where I stood, because I was very clear about what I thought about the gay lifestyle. Not gays themselves, because you never know, but the gay lifestyle is wrong, it's immoral. The Playboy motif of casual sex is wrong. And they knew that, but we got along, we had a lot in common otherwise. But you see what has happened, that was 25 years ago. I wrote it up in a magazine. Judy Brown let me write in her magazine, and I wrote this whole event up so that people could see what was planned. And it was all planned. The gays were going to get into every facet of our life. They were going to get into production of motion pictures. They were going to get into the media through the newspapers and so on. They had it all planned out. It's no accident. And in those days, if they were having a gay pride parade or something, we might join in with the sign that says, "We want to adopt your children." And they hated this. They weren't ready for that. Now, that would just be par for the course. They are adopting children. That's why the Catholic Charities had to get out of the adoption work here in this area of where our program is. And so our society has followed a plan of demoralization, in that sense that we are no longer following the morals that are so basic to a society. All societies. The Greeks had a certain morality, their philosophers we've used, Aristotle and Plato, had ideas of justice and integrity. The Egyptians, with all their writings and all, great minds, pagans, but still with an idea of a moral code, of a purpose for being, that there's more to life than simply pleasure. There is a code to live by that's just inherent in man. We don't even have to go into religion. We have a natural law built in us. Thou shalt not kill and steal and lie. We know inherently these things are wrong. They're spelled out in the commandments. They're spelled out in the teachings of the church, but they are inherent to man. Man's proper object intellectually is truth. You know, somebody tells you that if you go east, you'll wind up in California. You go east, you never get, you'd have to go around the world to get to, so you know you go west. And the mind is settled in that. When you start going west, you know you will reach California. And the proper object of our will is the good. We want good. We want good for ourselves and others, health, food, intellectual progress, and all these things. You don't even have to list what they are. The good is the natural object of the will, and the truth is the natural proper object of the intellect. And when you get off that, you're unhappy. And that's why we have such a miserable society. We are not choosing the good and the truth. We're choosing a lie. And the devil is the father of lies. So we have a job on our hands. Those of us who still know, that still have this knowledge and the commandments and the support of the church and so on, and the history behind us, have to take this out to others, because Jesus said, I don't know how many times I'm going to count one of these days, it's around 40, go and teach what I have commanded you. He said it to everybody. See, we have the idea, well, we're kind of special, priests are special, nuns are special. You know, actually, Jesus said, be ye perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. He said that to Hugh Hefner. He said that to the pimps. He said it to the prostitutes. He said it to people on drugs. He said it to everybody. Be ye perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. Everybody on earth today has that as their goal, whether they know it or not. And we, being very imperfect, but at least striving for perfection, have to take that truth out to the world. The world is starving for what we have.
You're listening to an episode of WSFI Spotlight on WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio. We will be right back after these messages. Join Bishop David Malloy of Rockford, Illinois, Dave Casper, 11-year NFL veteran and Pro Football Hall of Fame inductee, and special guest Mrs. Edward McCaskey of the Chicago Bears for the third annual WSFI benefit and fundraiser, Friday, October 31st at the Key Lime Cove in Gurnee, Illinois. The evening will begin with a VIP reception at 5:30 p.m., followed by dinner and both live and silent auctions at 6:30 p.m. The event will be hosted by the Chicago Bears' Patrick McCaskey, WSFI chairman. For more information, call 224-206-8455 or visit us at wsfiradio.org.
Are you retired or near retirement? Do you want to keep a larger amount of your assets in a safe place with guaranteed interest rates to protect yourself from a huge market swing? Are you amazed at how low the interest rates are at your bank? If you said yes to any or all of those questions, you may want to call me, Matt Tomlinson, at Catholic Financial Life to discuss our guaranteed fixed rate annuities. Call 847-548-MATT, 847-548-6288. Products not available in all states.
Welcome back to this episode of WSFI Spotlight, featuring Joe Scheidler, the National Director of the Pro-Life Action League, where he challenges the shifts in culture he has experienced over the years in light of his Catholic training and church teaching.
The things you and I know, they don't know, and they need them, and they want them because their proper object is what we have, the truth and goodness. So we are on a crusade. There's absolutely no question about it. And we have to realize that our crusade is not appealing to many people. Many people are trying to actually stamp us out. They're getting into learning. They're getting into medicine. They're coming in with all kinds of things that are dangerous, that are actually destructive to not only individual, but to society. We just had word recently, and I don't know how soon you'll hear this, but we heard it, that the bubble zone in Massachusetts, McCollum, has been struck down. The Supreme Court did something right. They said, you have a right to go talk to women going into the abortion clinics. They had a zone in which they could not enter. We have one in this area, in Chicago. They're all over the country. There was one Hill, Jeannie Hill, a friend of mine in Colorado, took her case of a bubble zone to the Supreme Court. Now, that it wasn't struck down along with the Massachusetts, but it opens it up. And our attorney, Tom Brecka, with the Thomas More Society, which we founded to take care of our RICO racketeer case, he is going to go before the court in Chicago and get the bubble zone knocked down in Chicago and all across the country. We now have a precedent in the Massachusetts case where they say, and Justice Alito was very straightforward on this, you have the right to free speech. Isn't that nice? We thought we had it, but the abortionists were able to take it away from us through legislation. Now we're getting it back. I don't know what other cases are going to be dependent upon this, but probably all over the country. Our freedom of speech is coming back, but they're trying desperately to stop us from speaking freely. Why are we out on the streets, Stan? We're out on the streets because we, as pro-life leaders, and I with the Pro-Life Action League, have to talk not just to the women going for abortions, not just to the doctors, although we've converted dozens and dozens of abortionists, doctors. We've had 6 conferences with former abortionists, Dr. Tony Levitino, Hillary McMillan, Beverly McMillan in Mississippi, had the first clinic in Mississippi. She was a doctor doing abortions, and suddenly it dawned on her she was taking human life. She dropped out of the abortion business and met her husband-to-be, who converted her to Christianity. She's a wonderful woman. She's on our tape telling about when she did abortions. And MacArthur Hill, I could list some 18 or 20 that we have interviewed. We have a new tape out on current converts to pro-life. And almost always when they come into pro-life, they come into Christianity. They come into believing in the author of life, God himself, and then the Savior, Jesus Christ. It's almost inevitable. And those are the ones that are out on the streets, and we have what we call Truth Tours, one coming up in July. We go 10 days, 3 different stops each day, an hour and a half at each stop until we get downtown on the bridges, getting the people going to the train stations. We stay 2 hours with our great big ugly pictures, which people hate. First trimester abortion, second trimester abortion, third trimester abortion. We also have the pictures of the babies alive in the womb at those stages. So they see the live baby, then they see what abortion does. And we get all kind of comments. And we get sometimes things thrown at us. I had a bucket of black paint thrown at me one time, very unpleasant, especially since it got me in the eyes and I had to have it dug out. They'd thrown knives, they'd thrown tools, they'd thrown a lot of water balloons. But that's dropping off. That's dropping off. We've been at this now since 2000, out on the streets, organized all over the country. We have a great group in Pittsburgh, great group in Baltimore, out in Tucson, Arizona, where we go out on the streets and we go to the busiest sections. We're not picketing a clinic. We are where the cars are, where the people are, where the people are walking across the bridges and so on, and we show them what abortion is. Because what you have in your memory stays there, whether you like it or not. When I was a little boy, I walked out of a theater. My dad owned the theater, so I went to the movies every night. He had 2 theaters in town. He had the ice cream factory and the pop factory and the ice and coal and the movies. So I had a great childhood. I was never unoccupied. But I came out of the movie one night, and they were having a display of wrecked cars. It was a safe driving campaign, and so they had these cars that had been in terrible accidents, and they had mannequins in them with paint, red paint, running down the sides. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. It was so realistic. These bodies on platforms, on trucks going by, flatbeds. And I stood there and looked at this, and I said, what is this about? And my sister said, I was very young, they're showing how reckless driving can end up in the death. That memory has never left me. Now, I may not be the safest driver, but I'm careful, because I've seen what can happen when you drive recklessly. When we show abortion, people know what happens to a child. It's not a woman's right. It's not her body. There's a victim. Besides the woman, there's a victim. And that seems so obvious, you wouldn't think you'd have to tell people, but you do. They don't get it. So we have to do what we do. We have to do it with zeal. You have to be zealous for the work of Christ. You can't just think about it. You have to do it. You have to get moving. You have to get up early. You have to stay late. You have to go where you don't want to go. Because Jesus said, go and teach. And that's absolutely a command. You have to do it. I should have been at the clinic today, but I had to come here. But my wife's out there, and I will go probably Saturday. And I'll be at the clinic and talk to the women if I can. There it's different. People think that everything pro-lifers do is a protest or a picket. It's not. We do sidewalk counseling. We talk to these women. And we have hundreds of women who have turned away from abortion because we were there to talk to them. They've turned away by seeing us. I remember one time Joe Wall in Philadelphia was at the abortion clinic. It was snowing very, very hard. And he pleaded with this young girl going through the snow, didn't want to stop and talk to him, but looked back and he was kneeling in a snowdrift. And she never forgot that, and she couldn't have her abortion because somebody had been there. Two people recently in the 40 Days for Life were standing under an umbrella during a driving rainstorm, and the woman came up and said, are you here for me? And I said, yep. And she said, that's good enough for me. I'll keep my baby. You just never know what's going to do it. But it's that presence. People wanted to be where Jesus was. There was a presence of Christ. We have to bring that presence out on the street. We have to be Alter Christi, other Christ, for our brothers and sisters. And we have to be very aware that in our time here that we're living, we have more of a battle than our parents, our grandparents had, because places that used to be safe havens are now dangerous. Hospitals are scary to many people. A lot of old people don't want to go to the hospital because they may be very easily let go. They put them under a lot of morphine. They stop the nutrition and hydration and so on. It's a problem at the other end. That's a difficult end, too, because people do die. I know my brother was hit some years ago right after 9/11. He was going to a prayer service. He was teaching in a high school in Decatur, Indiana. And he was on his way to a prayer service, and he thought, well, I've got just a few minutes to do my 4 miles. So he hopped on his mountain bike, started around the block to do his 4 miles, and a van came through the light and hit him in the back of the head with the side view mirror and killed him. But he didn't die immediately. He was airlifted to Fort Wayne, Indiana, to the hospital there. They put him on ventilators, and then we all gathered, and then the decision was, is he dead or not? Is the ventilator keeping him alive? I couldn't take it. I did not want to have any decision. Fortunately, in our family, he has 3 sons that are doctors, and my brother's a doctor, and so they decided to test him off of the ventilator, and he kept breathing, and then he died on his own. But that was a hard decision. We have hard decisions, but in many hospitals, they'll open the window, let the person catch a little case of pneumonia. I know this happens. They take them off the ventilator, they put them on morphine. So at the other end of life, we have problems too. And I'm not good on that, although we do care about people like the Shivos, you know, in Florida, where the daughter was not dying, but they took her off of food, hydration, and she died. It took about 12 days. That was not, that was a mercy killing. That was not simply dying. She was not in a dying condition. But I know that it was a very hard time. I couldn't go down there. I would have gone into the hospital past the police. I would have had to. And given her some water. She had a vase full of water there right next to her bed with roses, and she could not have any water. And if you went near the clinic, you were you were arrested. So we are scared of our own society. There's much, much more on this, and on my next program, we'll go into a little more of Scheidler's List and tell you what we're doing, and I'm going to give you a little clue that I'm writing a book called Racketeer for Life, because I was convicted by the United States Supreme Court, well, by a jury, a federal jury in Chicago, then went to the federal courts and through the court system, found that they could use racketeering laws, laws that were made for the big kingpins, triple damages, and they were used against me. So I had to go to trial, and then I had to go before the Supreme Court, and then I was exonerated, and it's been a 28-year battle. And now we just won a kind of a settlement, but it doesn't amount to anything because National Organization for Women won't give it to me. So I don't know whether to get a collection agency or what, but we'll talk about that on our next program.
This has been WSFI Spotlight. For more information on this or any other program, email info@wsfiradio.org.
The Long View by Archbishop Oscar Romero. It helps now and then to step back and take a long view. The kingdom is not only beyond our efforts, it's even beyond our vision. We accomplish in our lifetime only a tiny fraction of the magnificent enterprise that is God's work. Nothing we do is complete, which is a way of saying that the kingdom always lies beyond us. No statement says all that could be said. No prayer fully expresses our faith. No confession brings perfection. No pastoral visit brings wholeness. No program accomplishes the church's mission. No set of goals and objectives includes everything. This is what we are about. We plant the seeds that one day will grow. We water seeds already planted, knowing they hold future promise. We lay foundations that will need further development. We provide yeast that produces far beyond our capabilities. We cannot do everything, and there is a sense of liberation in realizing that. This enables us to do something, and to do it very well. It may be incomplete, but it is a beginning, a step along the way, an opportunity for the Lord's grace to enter and to do the rest. We may never see the end results, but that is the difference between the master builder and the worker. We are workers, not master builders. Ministers, not messiahs. We are prophets of a future, not our own. Amen. Join Bishop David Malloy of Rockford, Illinois, Dave Casper, 11-year NFL veteran and Pro Football Hall of Fame inductee, and special guest Mrs. Edward McCaskey of the Chicago Bears for the third annual WSFI benefit and fundraiser, Friday, October 31st at the Key Lime Cove in Gurnee, Illinois. The evening will begin with a VIP reception at 5:30 p.m., followed by dinner and both live and silent auctions at 6:30 p.m. The event will be hosted by the Chicago Bears' Patrick McCaskey, WSFI chairman. For more information, call 224-206-8455 or visit us at wsfiradio.org.